This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Hey, everyone. It's Estelle Herndon, political reporter for The New York Times. When I became a journalist, I made a promise to my readers, like the way that doctors take an oath to their patients. I committed to bringing the truth to light, no matter which party, business, organization, or person I'm reporting on. I have to be persistent. I have to do research, and I have to push back when someone tries to hide or spin the facts. And I know I'm going to write stories that both Democrats and Republicans don't like. But that's what The New York Times has been doing for more than a century. And that's what we're going to keep doing. We believe the public deserves the right to make up their mind based on the facts. So if you want to support this kind of work, you can subscribe to The New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
When you need to smile, but you can't afford it, go on, point it out, I'm gonna steal it. When the flow is more familiar than the ceiling.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your call me doomed to repeat it AF of music news and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
I'll never stop. Breaking the law for you, I'll never stop.
And I am here today to be dragged. You're listening to Emily Sandé. Remember her? So in 2012...
Everyone was Shazamming.
Yeah. In 2012, Emily Sandé's debut album came out. It's called Our Version of Events. And I thought it was kind of a banger. And I gave it my number one album of the year. And that same year, my number two album of the year was by an up-and-coming artist named Taylor Swift. The album was called Red. Now, you may think, John, what could possibly have led you to make this decision in the year of our Lord 2012? A couple of months ago, the music crew got together to plan out our end-of-decade coverage. Karen comes in with the hot pile of papers with me and JP's lists, our end-of-year lists. Joe starts rifling through them and alights upon this. I don't want to say it's unfortunate, but I wouldn't say it holds the test of time. And immediately started dragging me. Immediately, just roasted like this Dunkin' Donuts iced almond milk latte. Roasted. And I immediately knew that a special decade-end episode of Popcast had to be a real-time dragging of myself, John Caramonica, John Perales, chief pop music critic on the New York Times, sitting right here.
I gotta say, John, you look really good in that hair shirt.
Thank you. It's true. Dragged by Joe Coscarelli, New York Times pop music reporter, and for the purposes of this episode, master of ceremonies.
Yeah, you're Inquisitor. This is not, I'm not coming into this with a weapon drawn. I'm
except for all the papers, like, literally like 75 pieces of paper. In
no,
front
no,
of
it's
you.
More like thumb screws.
Oh yeah, look, gosh. I'm going to put it to the world straight. I'm a reporter. I'm fair. You guys will have your chance to respond. We're just going to take a trip through the decade. I want to also point out this is 2012. We're going to start back at the beginning, but I want to point out this the top Caramonica's top five for 2012. So you have Emily Sandé, Our Version of Events. I'm pretty sure. Just playing it at the top of this episode was maybe the second or third time John has ever heard these songs.
It's an impressive body of work from a promising young singer.
Number two, Taylor Swift, Red. Number three, Waxahachie, American Weekend. Number four.
Actually, probably the real number one.
Frank Ocean, Channel Orange. three spots below Emily Sandé's, our version of events.
Yo, what is Emily Sandé Hive? Is there an Emily Sandé Hive?
Five, Kesha Warrior. Six, little album called Good Kid, Mad City by Kendrick Lamar.
Too high.
Well, seven, we could say too high. Nas, Life is Good. Another one that maybe hasn't aged that well. Tonight,
that's like whiskey drinking, John, except I don't drink.
Right.
That's like, if I drank whiskey, that's what I would listen to while I drink whiskey.
I mean, Tonight at number eight,
a banger.
Fine.
Every song on that record's good.
We'll get there. Future, Pluto.
Too low.
And 10, Lee Bryce, Hard to Love. Okay.
Honestly, a magnificent country record, and more people should listen to
it. So, a very Caramonica top 10.
Not as Caramonica as my 2019 all top right. 10, to be fair, but still a very Caramonica top 10.
So, I think, you know, this is about...
What was I trying to say?
What were you trying to say? That's the question. I feel like this episode is going to be about... What are we talking about when we're talking about lists? We're talking about a decade. What stories are told through the passage of time? How does history prove criticism right or wrong? Does that matter? Or is the only thing that matters how you felt at that very moment?
Your
deadline was 3 days ago?
Yes.
When Fletcher was asking for your list?
Peace to the god, Fletch. MFing dollars.
Asaya was like, John, where's your copy?
Oh my gosh.
This is back in the day.
All
was,
gods, I
was
all earths.
I was a child when these came
That's
out.
That's true. You were still in junior high school when
I was
this
a small
came out.
Child waiting for my edition of the New York Times to see what albums I had missed that year.
Yes.
Once you learned how to read.
Yeah.
The one copy in the New York Times in your Florida town to your house. Okay. I do have a memory, and I may not have as crisp a memory of every year and every list, but of this year. I remember struggling with this because, in a weird way, I didn't want this to be my number one record. But I listened to it a bunch of times in, like, the 2 weeks leading up to that.
Clearly.
Yeah. And it was so seamless. It's a very smooth record. And it kind of comes out of that British tradition of kind of, like, very light, high street, jungle adjacent R&B. So there's this kind of, like... insistent pep to the record, and like you start it and then like before you know it you're like at track 9, and I just remember thinking like how effective it was and how like I didn't turn it off. There's no point where you're like, ah, this is kind of like fading. It's very steady and the high points are high, so I think I mistook that maybe for like overall greatness. I think it's a very good record.
How's it aged?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
And how has the rest of Emily Sandé's decade been?
I think she is still successful in England. I mean, they were also trying to cross her over a little bit in America at this point. On Spotify, I saw she got two other albums.
Okay.
Long Live the Angels. I did listen. That was the second one. I did listen to that. I was not that into that record. And then she had one this year, which I have not heard.
And to be fair, this is not about making fun of Emily.
No, not even slightly. You're like, making fun of me.
This is just, you know, when you see a number one album of the year from the New York Times, this is a surprise pick.
I think I also maybe saw her live and she was very good live.
Mm-hmm. You called it loud as a sunrise.
That's a good line. That's a good line.
All right. We're going to take it back
That's
to 2010.
That's the Flonase talking.
I'm a little stuffy. My apologies. It's that time of year. It's a decade end.
Flu and cold.
Now, I will say, just from glancing at these lists, JP...
Can I just qualify
one, more.
One thing?
Yeah.
No, not about Emily Sandé, which is that after our meeting when we decided that this... would happen, I have not gone back to look at my list.
Right.
Because I didn't want to prepare any defense.
Yes. This is all real time.
Yes.
This is all happening.
I am going,
time.
Whatever emotions come out of this exchange are going to be pure, they're going to be real, and they're going to hurt.
So I've glanced at these lists. I haven't studied them. Preparation is not a big part of Popcast. Life is preparation for Popcast.
God. It's a true story.
But JP, just from glancing at your list, I will say, as in real life, as in print, you are the bedrock of this section, of this arts team, and very consistent.
I love to get fired in real time.
You're very consistent.
Does that mean everybody's stepping on me is bedrock?
Look, I'm going to say that your 2010 list could very well be your 2019 list.
Ooh,
and for
is
better
that good or
worse,
or bad?
I mean, with the exception probably of the number one, which was the Arcade Fire's The Suburbs.
Which was a very good album.
Very good album.
Which was their last good album.
That is,
that album is a big statement.
A very 2010 album.
Yeah, very 2010 album. Won a Grammy.
It's true.
Which, as we know, is not a guarantee of quality. but it was a big statement. They were tearing it up live. It felt like it was substantial.
So I want to blow quickly through the rest of your top 10. And this is the most Pirellis run.
This is 2010.
Say. This is 2010. Yep. Janelle Monáe. Joanna Newsom, Vampire Weekend, Sufjan Stevens, Age of Ads, King Sunny Ade, Sade, Sleigh Bells, and Kanye West. Like, if that's not a JP run, I don't know what else is. Now, I'd say you went maybe, this is also quite Pirellis of you, but Danger Mouse and Sparkle Horse at number 10.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Have you listened to that one much lately?
No. But I've been listening to a lot of Danger Mouse elsewhere.
You think Danger Mouse had a good decade?
Yeah, Danger Mouse had a really good decade.
He had a quieter decade, probably, than the decade prior.
Can I just shout out to whoever bought on eBay my copy of the clean version of the Gray album for like $100? Like, shouts to that person, whoever that is.
But the thing is, you know, lists are weird and aggravating anyway.
Do you feel like it has to stand the test of time, or is it literally, as Joe is asking,
a snapshot of that moment?
Just like at this, on December 10th, this is what it is.
The latter. We're the first draft of history, right?
That's what they tell us.
That's what my paycheck says. Right there in the memo. So,
but it is the moment, and it's like that album felt right at the time. Mm-hmm. Also, there's usually one slot in my list where I just like throw up my hands and think number 10 could be any of 50 albums, and I'm just going to go on this one. I mean, that's going to be consistent through all of the lists.
Yeah. And I also think, and we've both done this in recent years, we've sort of gone past 10.
Well, speak for yourself.
Some of us follow
Mr.
the rules.
Top 14.
Oh, my
not.
God. Well, also, like, I just tried to be on my grill, Marcus. You know, shout out grill. I see you dragging me in these streets. I really enjoy it every time.
I would say, as a snapshot of 2010, you know, you got Contra, the Vampire Weekend album, Soldier of Love, probably, has Sade put out an album since
not
then?
Since.
No, that's it.
God willing, maybe next year. My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, of course. Sleigh Bells, Treats, weirdly influential album, I would say.
Wouldn't you? Well, you started with Sleigh Bells, and started the decade with Sleigh Bells, ended with Gex.
That's what I'm saying. That's like, you know, there's a through line there. Let's play a Sleigh Bells song while we're at it.
Let's go.
What's on Treats? Anyone?
Let's see. All right, let's do Crown on the Ground.
That was their moment.
That was 2010.
That was their moment. Yeah.
I mean, it lasted
about... There's a
difference
between it being their moment and it being on a list.
But it lasted about a week and a half after the list came out.
Right. It lasted from November 20th to December 10th.
There's a Yesayer song on here. That's, you know, again,
these
2010.
These are good songs.
Yeah. Look, I'm not mad.
Joe, So when you were in junior high school, when these songs came out, were you banging Yesayer?
I saw Yesayer probably. I went to NYU, so I was just finishing up my time at NYU, realistically. And one thing I will put here for all the people who did not hire me, I brought the Sleigh Bells demo to the Fader office
and?
For my interview for an internship.
And they were like...
And I was not hired.
Who got hired for that internship?
It's a great question. Email me. I know you. Whoever got hired for that internship.
And what demo did you bring in?
I was like, I think this
did
is
you bring a,
band. A
Drake demo?
So anyway, that was my snapshot from 2010.
Oh my
John
God.
Caramonica, number one album of 2010. I stand by it for you. Teflon Don by Rick Ross.
Such a gem. My God.
Pedro, can you drop a Ross ad-lib here, please?
What a like lush, like sensual, right? You know what I mean? Like just
Honestly, I think this is a Caramonica. You guys were on point in 2010. All right. Number two, Taylor Swift, Speak Now. Number three, Kanye West, Dark Twisted Fantasy. Number four, Drake, Thank Me Later. Number five, The Monitor by Titus Andronicus.
Did I get invented this year? I feel like this.
Number six, Gary Allen, Get Off on the Pain.
Ooh.
Number seven, perhaps the real sleeper hit of every John Caramonica list, Fabulous. There is no competition to
such a
Funeral Service.
Honestly, can listen to that top to bottom. Not a bad song, barely a bad bar.
Justin Bieber, My World 2.0. All right, this is a tough one. Number nine, R. Kelly, Love Letter.
Here we are.
John, right. It was a different time.
It was a different time.
Tell us how critics were thinking about R. Kelly in 2010.
So, obviously, there was public understanding of the Aaliyah situation, and he had been acquitted of the charges in his case. There was not a robust critical or journalistic, outside of Jim DeRogatis, there was not a robust critical or journalistic pushback. And so in that era, which is very different from the XXXTentacion era and very different from the last two or three years, generally those records were covered by consensus. Everybody covered them. Magazines covered them. Newspapers covered them. And typically with a nod to this happened.
Let me read your little blurb. It's a two-sentence blurb. In the first sentence, which I won't read, you invoke Michael Jackson.
Wow. It's only like 7 minutes in.
Second sentence, it's as close as this embattled singer will ever get to a clean slate, whether he deserves it or not.
I mean, that's...
That's how people felt about R. Kelly in 2010.
I think actually most people didn't even feel that strongly, to be honest. I remember I would write things like that, or I would review records, and I would get letters from fans saying, how dare you bring this up? It's settled business. Why would you ever talk about this? That audience was much louder at that time. And, you know, obviously we look back on that period with some regret and wish to handle it differently. But at the same time, what we've learned in the last two or three years is that when someone puts out music and that music is popular and moves people, it does feel insufficient to ignore it. You do feel like you have to engage with it.
And there was a good piece this week on Jezebel by Rich Juzwiak. Shout out to Rich, about how even the musicians that we've quote-unquote canceled in the last year or two often see their streams go up, whether that's from the controversy or whether that's because people don't care.
Right.
Who knows?
Or dedicated fans double down.
Right. This is far from settled issue, but I think it's safe to say R. Kelly will not be appearing on many more top tens for the rest of his life. Top songs... Waka Flocka Flame, Oh Let's Do It Remix, which we're going to play as soon as I finish running through these singles. Rick Ross, MC Hammer, Lady Antebellum, Need You Now.
Oh! Oof.
An all-star remix that I was actually recently talking to someone about on Twitter for Deuces. Chris Brown featuring Drake, T.I., Kanye West, Fab, Ross, and Andre 3000. What a moment.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Brown, same issue.
I mean, a song bursting with misogyny, but a real song.
Mm-hmm.
Miguel featuring J. Cole, All I Want Is You, Runaway, Cults, Go Outside,
hey!
Some real 2010,
ding,
pardon
ding,
my
ding,
language.
Ding, 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 ding.
Earl by Earl Sweatshirt. Remember where you were the first time you saw the Earl video?
Yeah, I do. I do, actually.
How could you forget?
Yeah, that was, man, what a special time.
Beamer, Benz, or Bentley? 2010 was a good year. Let's play Oh, Let's Do It Remix. We have to.
Oh, my God. Go punch a wall or
something. Waka Flocka Flame disrespected in end-of-decade coverage. Some people have said it, but nobody has really stood up for
him. It's been too, you know, he's so early decade, and it was still very post-Gucci. And I think a lot of people didn't really, until Flockavelli, didn't, like, totally get on board. I think when people are lionizing the big figures, he kind of, like, is a little too late to be lionized in the late 2000s Gucci lineage, and a little too early, and Lex Luger aged really quickly.
And lost in the Dat Piff era of rap, like pre-streaming.
Oh, sure. You need all those tapes.
CD.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
absolutely.
But obviously, sonically, a very important figure to 2010s rap, I would say.
I send my female shooters, they'll rock a bye, baby. 1070 shouted in my hood, we got them. Oh, they do it. Hey, oh, they do it.
going to speed up a little bit as we move through. I felt like 2010 was a
we covered a lot of like psychological ground.
I'm going to go ahead and say 2010. John Perales' number one album of 2011. Once again, a very JP pick, Feist Metals.
It's a beautiful album.
Beautiful album.
I
we know there's at least two Feist fans at this table and one dissenter.
Oh my gosh.
We don't have to talk about it.
No, but there is no one in this building, in this city, possibly in this country, who has a better ear than John Prellis. That does not exist. Does not exist. This album's corny. Anyway.
But maybe her least corny album. No, it's a bit of a difficult album.
Well, you know how Vultures difficult too.
But you know how Vultures did that thing where they ranked every movie that was released in the 2010s? All the Feist records were like in the bottom group.
All right.
No.
We know you don't like Feist. Paul Simon, Watch the Throne, Tom Waits, Drake, Take Care, Toon Yards, Who Kill. Toon Yards is a person who showed up on a lot of top 10 lists throughout this decade and not a lot of decade end lists.
Yeah, the sort of lens on Toon Yards just looks crazy.
What was that? Do you like what were people seeing in Toon Yards in 2011?
Well, in 2011 people were seeing she was great with loops. She has a really big leathery voice that grabs you. She had a lot of ideas about class and race and culture that were interesting. They didn't wear well. Was it Chuck Klosterman who basically said, you know, wait, this is pretentious, you're all going to be embarrassed? And then everybody decided we were embarrassed.
Yeah.
I'm not embarrassed about Who Kill. I think that record's a fun, propulsive listen.
This is real Paz and Jop core. Yeah.
I really, okay, Yards, I cannot believe that I'm about to like issue like some kind of modest defense of Toon Yards. Was Toon Yards on my list as well?
No, you got lucky.
Okay, I saw Toon Yards play in the basement of Union Hall in Park Slope, in one of the early Toon Yards shows. This is when we used to cover a lot of live concerts. And I was, honestly, and this is before Ed Sheeran was at the Mercury Lounge, like, filming, you know, like, doing the loops by himself. It was striking to see a standalone performer with, I believe, her boyfriend at the time kind of on backing strumming. But essentially, a standalone performer doing all of that alone.
This is Andrew Bird Erasure.
Never heard of that person. Never heard of that. I just remember being really struck by it and moved. And I think she understood. I know it's like a mundane thing to say, but like she understood bass. She understood movement. She understood body. And that, for me, goes a long way.
So you're exonerating me for Toon Yards, but
not
killing
Feist.
Me on Feist.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, yes. Caramonica, never change.
Thank you.
We got a Liturgy album on here in your 10 spot. Some songs.
Remember Art Metal? Everybody remember Art Metal?
Some songs. Adele's Rolling in the Deep. Goat Ye is Somebody I Used to Know. Beyonce, Run the World. There's some good stuff on here. Lady Gaga, Marry the Night.
I think I was responding to a good show I saw. I think that's the only excuse for that.
I don't know that Lady Gaga song, I have to say.
I have to also say I don't know that song.
Bjork's Virus, Danny Brown, Die Like a Rock Star. Some cool stuff.
Well, I got to say, you know, list making, the top 10 songs tend to be the 10 albums that should have been 11 through 20.
Right.
I don't.
That's a philosophy.
That's not for me.
Yeah,
I
no,
don't
you
agree.
Don't do that.
No. Mine are tend to be best songs by people who did not make good albums, not best songs off of albums
so,
that were
so
11
you're
to 20.
Seeing the clash of philosophies.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so an album that came out this year, which is on only one of your lists, and it appears at number 10, is, to my mind, as again, I'm a reporter,
the greatest
not a
album
critic,
of the 2010s?
Not a fan. Or no, excuse me. I'm a fan, not a critic. To me, the best Beyonce album of the 2010s, 4.
Yeah, really good record. Great R&B album.
I mean,
really impressive.
4 has Party, has 1 plus 1 on it, has Girls, has Love on Top. I mean, like,
and this is, and it's interesting because this is before the full deification of Beyonce.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Like, it was the beginning of.
It was the beginning
of. But this was kind of her radio peak.
Yes, it's when I mean it's a
yeah peak. Just or towards the end of her radio peak. Girls is probably the biggest radio song on here. Party maybe had some run.
Yeah, but I feel like this is, I mean, we could check the Wikipedia, but I feel like this is basically when you could reliably hear Beyonce songs on the radio.
Your first line of the blurb, this has been Beyonce's least commercially successful album. but is actually an accomplishment.
Wow.
So
wow,
it's right there.
How far we've come. That's so strange.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and every subsequent record has been less commercially successful, but also more iconically brand
building.
Maybe
the self-titled was bigger than this because it was an event.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it feels like a more naive time where you could just casually put Beyonce at number 10 and just be like, that's fine.
Sure, yeah.
No
Drake,
problem.
Take Care above it. You have The Weeknd's House of Balloons, another album, mixtape, whatever you want to call it, that I think, frankly, has been a little bit disrespected in end-of-decade conversations.
Do you think so? I mean, House of Balloons is spectacular.
And important.
So important.
And came out of nowhere, changed, I would say, the course of music.
I was
in the
listening
decade.
To it just yesterday because
Uncut
Gems. I was just listening to it yesterday, and it's just the thing that I was struck by about House of Balloons, listening in 2019. You know, when it first came out, you're like, man, this is lo-fi. This is like, you know, submerged in the mix. Like, this feels radical. But in 2019, I'm like, no, these are just really good pop songs.
Yeah, they're hits.
Yeah.
Like, the Morning is a hit.
Yeah, like, they're just like, yeah, they're fuzzy at the edges, but they're not, like, as radical as they felt. Because I remember how radical they felt at the time. I mean, I literally flew to Guelph, which is, like, outside of Toronto, because I bought a ticket to his first ever show, and I flew to Toronto and got picked up by the photographer at some random airport hotel to drive to Guelph to see this show. That's how urgent it was at the time. But now it's like, these are good. Great
and
songs.
And you wrote, wherever the reclusive Abel Tesfaye is hiding, he may want to stay there.
Ooh.
And in the parentheses where we put the record label, you put theweekend.com. This is a real time. You got Pistolani's on here. You also have the Liturgy album on here.
It's a great record. Five. I'm just saying. It was a good time.
Lady Antebellum. And then you have some real 2011 stuff. You have the Yuck album and the Dum Dum Girls album at number 3 and 4.
Wow. This is what happens when you go to like 150 concerts a year.
Yeah.
Yuck, that record's really good. Terrible. I saw them at Valerie Ballroom. They were awful. Like unwatchably bad. Dum Dum Girls, you know, very proto girl punk package of 2016 or whenever that was. Mm-hmm. Like very, you know,
yeah,
that was
an influential band.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and this is after Vivian Girls, sort of like, isn't it? Vivian Girls maybe a year before?
Yeah, that sounds right.
I think as a kind of like exponent of a prominent scene at that time, maybe more than the album itself.
You want to play something from that?
I wouldn't know what.
Pedro, you want to hit us with a Dum Dum Girls song?
Just any Dum Dum Girls song?
All right.
Okay. No shots.
No, no, no.
Matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece, and in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
This is A.O. Scott. I'm a critic at the New York Times. What I do and what the other critics here do is part of the same project that all of the journalists at the New York Times work on every day, to give you clarity and perspective, and above all, a deeper understanding of the world. When you subscribe to the New York Times, it's not just here are the headlines, but here's the way everything fits together. If you'd like to subscribe, please go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
2012, another strong year for music, I would say. Another Pirellis. Like, really, you should be excused from this podcast. You got Frank Ocean, Channel Orange at number one, Fiona Apple, Idler Wheel at number two. And then we have Metz at number eight, Betty LeVette at number nine, DJ Rashad at number 10.
The 8, 9, and 10s on all the lists are just like, they were lucky that week.
Right, some wild cards.
Yeah, 2 weeks earlier or later, there would have been something else there.
DJ
but
Rashad.
But I stand by Betty LeVette.
R.I.P. DJ Rashad.
R.I.P.
Yeah, I stand by Betty LeVette. I stand by DJ Rashad, too.
John Pirellis, have you ever faltered in your own tastes?
We're both really good at being ourselves.
It's really
true.
No, but
this is, I saw there was like a pretty good David Drake tweet the other day. He was kind of like, lists are kind of like only good if they're not consensus.
If they're idiosyncratic.
Yeah, like if they really, if they genuinely reflect the taste of the person. And I remember when I first got to the paper in 08, I don't know if I did my first list that year or the subsequent year, but I remember feeling like, does my list have to solve a problem? You know what I mean? Like, does my list have to solve, like, the New York Times perception of popular music? And I feel like maybe in my first year or two, I felt that to a degree, but I don't feel that way anymore.
Because you've solved it.
There we are.
G'night! It's over!
John, we talked about your 2012. It was a strange year. And I just want to say, your songs list this year was posted on Artsbeat, which was a little blog that the New York Times used to have.
Artsbeat.
Who knows what's on that songs list? Nobody saw it.
Can you see it? Or
no, I have the link for it. I have a link on a printed piece of paper, but okay, I don't have your
Can you push the link on
it? I presume it was good, whatever it was.
Let's move on to 2013. Lord came out that year, Pure Heroine. That was, John, your number one album of the year, Pirellis.
I can stand by that one.
Yeah. Laura Marling, Vampire Weekend, Nine Inch Nails, M.I.A., Janelle Monáe, David Bowie. Again, this is just like, JP, you're just always so yourself. Both of you are, but
yes.
You in a more linear way.
Yes. I should probably say that I was a skeptic of Lord at this point.
Mm.
I wasn't sold.
Say more.
It felt skeletal to me. And not intentionally so.
She does not appear on either your albums or your songs.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you look back and, you know, Royals is huge. Yeah, yeah. And, like, there's, you know, there are things on that record that I really like. But when you really dove in, it made me rethink if I was right or wrong. And I'm not sure I was right.
Oh, good.
Yeah. My Lord memory My Lord memory from this time is Hot 97 playing Royals.
Yeah, I know.
And
all
not
the time.
Even the Rick Ross
yes,
remix.
Yeah, just playing Royals.
Straight Royals.
Well, they started playing at some point the Rick Ross version, and then they stopped.
And then they took off
Ross. Yeah, they just took off Ross. Also, why
Royals.
Was Rick Ross? Okay, I'm fully convinced if you work with Rick Ross, email us the answer to this question. Did that verse exist for some other song?
And it was pasted onto the Royals.
And it was pasted onto the Royals remix.
Pedro, you know what to do.
Silver Rose Ray, cigarette smokes in it. New fur rug, now my dirty boots in them. Flowing in a pocket like enrolling in a college. Mean as a dean, triple beam, well polished. She wanna watch Scandal, I wanna count a handful. Dead president sleep in the attic of the mansion. All I heard were murder, think the house haunted. Super Bowl ticket, these bitches in fair charges. Label the racketeer, John Grisham with a pen. Top three writer, but number one at your event. Mastermind unfolds like a true crime. Double M gold mine for the whole time.
I will collect the code.
Maybach music.
We count our dollars on the train to the party. And everyone who...
JP, your songs list that year, I believe the first appearance of Kacey Musgraves on any of these lists. Some Time Capsule stuff, The Knife, The Blow, Phosphorescent.
Hey, The Blow!
These are nice memories. I'm not mad at it.
Yeah, The Blow's great.
And then a little song called Blurred Lines by Robin Thicke.
Oof.
Ah, yes. I do think that song is...
A Marvin Gaye song?
Probably why it initially got me was it's like, you know, activating those primal memories.
And we've all paid for it ever since.
Wait, is Blurred Lines on my list?
Let's find out.
Is Kacey Musgraves should be on my list?
So first we're going to litigate your top two albums.
Okay.
Number one, you have Drake. Nothing Was the Same. Number two, Yeezus by Kanye West.
It's, you know, you could write a whole a whole essay, a whole thing about where I place Drake and Ye in relationship to each other.
I think every time so far, Drake has been above.
And also where I place Ye and Taylor in relationship to each other. Because this always comes
up.
Stories
of the decade.
Yeah. I forget later in the decade, we'll find it, I'm sure, but like where I put someone somewhat sus right above Kendrick, and like a lot of people on Twitter were really upset about it, but it was deliberate.
You did that to Kendrick a few times in this.
Sorry, Nothing Was the Same over Yeezus. Probably would flip that. Nothing Was the Same, more obviously influential and temporally specific. Yeezus, the more obvious disruption, and maybe like historically has like a longer tail in terms of like how it shapes other people down the line across genre. So maybe would flip those.
You called Yeezus a career redefinition.
One of many, apparently.
You called Drake,
an annual thing,
quote, all the emoji.
That was a great line.
Probably the first time you wrote the words emoji.
That was a great line. I do remember really being proud when I stumbled on that
sentence.
Drake
is all the emoji.
It's a true story. Wait, name the ones. I named them.
The prayer hands, the dancing girls, the diamond ring, the blown kiss, the laugh through tears.
Standing ovation.
Pedro's clapping. John is bowing.
Thank you so much. I expect a bonus retroactive to 2013 for that sentence.
Strong year. Ashley Monroe, Jai Paul, Pusha T, Sky Ferreira.
Oh, Jai Paul, that's not even a real record. See, here we are. Breaking the fourth wall. Not even a real record.
And you have no title there.
It was like zip file.
Excuse me. Technically speaking, it doesn't exist. This collection of demos or sketches or maybe finished songs, blah, 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 blah. Quickly removed. Migos, YRN.
Yeah.
Moment.
Yeah.
Chance the Rapper, Acid Rap. Haim, Days Are Gone. You like Haim, John Caramonica?
In this year, I did. This is a very...
You like Haim now?
What does Haim sound like now?
You tell me.
I don't actually know the answer to that question. Should we play something off of the Haim record?
Yeah, sure.
I keep thinking cults. I keep thinking go outside.
Not cults. Not go outside. You can play
can
go outside.
Can we play any Haim song that sounds like cults, go outside? Let's play Haim, if I can change your mind.
Bubblegum Indie, a.k.a. the new major label rock.
That didn't happen. Can't hit them all out of the park.
Ty Dolla $ign, Beach House 2, a strong number 10.
Oh my God, should be higher, to be honest. Beach House 2, I mean, whew, and then bangers.
I want to just note quickly, we'll move on. Miley Cyrus, Wrecking Ball came out that year. It's on your songs list. And Future, in what is stylized in the New York Times as, quote, star, 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 end quote.
So there are a number of disruptions.
I think there could be
list.
An exclamation point in that too. So maybe some versions of that song.
Yeah, I'm
have
not
the
sure. Yeah, I don't quite remember why it ended up without an exclamation point. I don't remember if it was a copy decision.
All my real Free Bands followers know that song. Know what song we're talking about.
Yes,
we're not going to play it.
Can't play it.
Great song.
I happen to just pull up this list. I Googled it and I happen to pull it up. I want to go on record and saying I don't remember what my number two song sounds like. I just want to say that.
DJ Spin King featuring Jeremiah and French Montana. Sounds like a good lineup.
Body Operator remix. I'm not sure what it sounds like. Don't know how it's different from the original. Like, you know, but I'm sure it was great.
You got Casey Musgraves in the mix. You got King Cruel, Easy Easy. I would still like to hear that song. 2014. Another Pirellis.
Oh, wait. Ariana and Nathan Sykes is on this list.
Yeah, that's back in 2013. Almost is Never Enough. I can't remember that song.
Oh, that's a great ballad. It's the super melodramatic one when they were dating and they're kind of going back. This is like serious Ariana.
Yeah. 2014. Some artists from that year include Kaya Trece, Angel Olsen, Azealia Banks, Broke With Expensive Taste. Great album.
I'll stand by that.
FKA Twigs, LP1, Sia's A Thousand Forms of Fear, Roseanne Cash, self-titled St. Vincent, TV on the Radio, Leonard Cohen, and Mary J. Blige, The London Sessions.
Dude, we have zero. Oh, we must have had zero overlap.
Yeah, I can't imagine anyone has made your list. I believe this was my first year at the New York Times. I think I started the month that this list was published. So this is the beginning the beginning of the Coscarelli era. I don't make lists, but I was here when this was published.
You were quietly influential.
List proximate.
John, your number one of that year was a real Caramonica pick. Do you remember what it was?
No.
What if you had to guess?
I don't. The 2010s are a blur. As far as I'm concerned, there's only 3 years that happened between now and 2010. So just take me out of my misery.
I remember thinking this was a cool pick for number one, but not the best album of the year. Young Thug and Bloody J's Black Portland. Yeah.
Okay, so here's a funny thing that happens. And JP, I'm sure you can sympathize with this,
This is the first
right?
appearance of Young Thug, I believe, on this list.
Yes, I think so. And obviously, there are good Young Thug tapes prior to this.
Of course.
You know what it's like, JP. You've been here a long time. Like, you think, like, you shine a light on something that many, many people are not plugged into. You give something a big look.
Right.
And you sort of assume, like, I'm going to, you know, people will be excited. Like, you give this thing a look. Keep in mind, like, in 2019, like, everything gets a look everywhere. But in 2014, there were still things that didn't get looks places. And so I expected when I put this Thug record at number one to get a lot of backlash from people who were like, why would you ever put Thug at number one?
Nobody said anything?
No. I got backlash from people who were like, this isn't even a good Thug record.
David Drake again.
You know
probably.
What I'm saying? Like, it was just like literally like, come on, guys. Really? This is what we're doing? Anyway, everybody really doubles down and says that like they go in on the Rich Gang era Thug, which is after this. I think the template, the Rich Gang era Thug, is in this record.
Let's play Florida Water.
Oh, I used to go on the train hard on this record.
Girl, I'm smashing on you. Got a spot? Let me come crash it on you. Take you out of that simple fashion on them. Buy your rings and now you're flashing on them. Get in that pistol, try not to slip. Girl, you know I'm laying no chips.
Lay.
Yes, sir, I want your sauce.
What?
Number two, Beyonce by Beyonce.
Heard of it.
Worse than Black Portland by Young Thug and Bloody J.
Fight me.
YG, My Crazy Life, Sturgill Simpson, Meta Modern Sounds, Future's Honest, Jason Derulo, Talk Dirty.
That was a risky pick. Great record. Great pop record. Really, really good pop record. Super tacky.
Super tacky.
So tacky. Like, honestly, like, one of the tackiest records I've ever put on a list.
This is a great sandwich. So, in between Jason Derulo and Tinashe's Aquarius, 1989 by Taylor Swift.
Is Tree Payne paying you to do this?
Could you just reshuffle those so that they're in the right order?
Did Tree make you do this?
This is just, so you're saying 1989, and,
Paula,
a little better than Tinashe, and a little worse than Jason Derulo.
I want to apologize to anybody who's ever worked for Taylor Swift.
Your old Droog, Jason Aldean.
Oh, wow, Your Old Droog, yeah.
This is another appearance of Fab on your top songs list. We're talking about Cuffin Season.
Really good song.
This is also the year that Drake put out 0 to 100, The Catch Up, on SoundCloud.
Yeah.
And you have James Bay's Let It Go on your songs list.
Pass.
You're not allowed to call anybody corny.
Yeah, pass.
Ever again.
Pass. Great voice. Right.
I want to say, you know, this was the year when the Beyonce record literally came out the year before.
This is 2014, and the Beyonce album dropped as a surprise in December of 2013.
So I was trying to play by the top 10.
So you play by the rules. John, you did this again this year.
I do it many years.
Where you put Bad Bunny's album, which came out
Christmas of last year. If it came out after the deadline for filing our copy the previous year, then it counts.
Yeah, I'm actually switching my rule to that rule for now.
Do you remember where you were when the Beyonce record dropped?
I was at my computer trying to play it back.
No, I think you wrote an A1 story about its release, if I'm not wrong.
But, like, do you remember where you found, like, when you found out about it? Like, did you have to, did someone call you?
I think we knew
someone
it was coming.
Faxed him.
I think we knew it was coming at, like, midnight or something.
I feel like maybe Yvette called me or
you
something.
You got a little tip?
Like,
Or after it dropped.
I don't remember.
No.
There are
we
so many
surprise
Beyonce things I can't line up in
but
my
this
mind.
This was the surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I might have gotten like a 11:40 p.m. Phone call.
Like
or
a
something.
20 minute heads up.
Maybe. I can't quite remember. I hope I'm not spoiling any.
I mean, this is how
I haven't
it works.
Signed an NDA. So, yeah, I think maybe I got like a very, very, very short notice heads up.
We're going to go quickly through 2015. We're halfway through the decade, but we're not going to really talk about 2019.
No, we're going to
save that. Kendrick Lamar, To Pimp a Butterfly, your number one, John Perales.
Tell a Pulitzer, people.
What's your biggest regret so far of what we've listed?
I think they're all actually pretty good albums. I don't know what the other 30,000 albums that came out each year were, but you won't go wrong listening to any of these lists still.
I'm curious.
I may have had too much Sufjan Stevens.
Right, there's a lot of Sufjan.
I may have had too much Bjork. but they sound good.
I'm sorry to hijack the mic, but if you just saw the body language in this room, JP, cool as a cucumber, John, caged cornered animal. Just wanted to let you know that. I had to say it.
It's wow, fine. Pedro just stole the mic.
That's quite all right. That's quite all right.
I'm not asking your biggest regret yet. We're going to get through a couple more years first. But I am curious of what we've named, and I know you guys haven't really done this, what of these albums makes your top 10 or top 5 of the decade? Like, is Yeezus or Nothing Was the Same in your top 5 of the decade?
Take Care probably is. Okay. I assume Take Care was on the 20-whatever list.
Yeah, Take Care was in here.
Take Care certainly does. Yeezus and Fantasy.
So those are your Drake and Kanye albums?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. Probably Red.
Mm-hmm. Probably. That's your Taylor album of the decade?
It changes. Mm-hmm. It changes. But I say Red is a safe. It's a safe one.
Not 1989?
There are weak spots. I mean, there's weak spots on every Taylor record. Let's keep it a buck. But I'd say Red is probably the one that feels like
the highest highs, maybe.
Yeah, and the least kind of like, lows. Every now and then on Taylor record, there's a song where you're just like, God, did like a 9-year-old write
it's
this?
Usually like in the middle of the second side.
Yeah. Right. Where it's like someone.
Long albums.
Someone could have just been like track 10, like let's make that like the Target Japan bonus track.
And what would be your dark horse album of the decade from, it's probably a Fab mixtape, but.
Not Jason Derulo.
Come on, it's Jay Paul.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I mean, those J. Paul songs really hold up.
Oh, I agree.
And were so important. And in a weird way, like, all the stuff that came out this year was so anticlimactic. I hate to say it, because I still would like to interview J. Paul. But, just throwing that out there. But when that zip file just, like, magically appeared, it was as important as Frank Ocean Channel Orange. It was in the realm of importance of a Taylor record, as Yeezus, as Beyonce, like in terms of as House of Balloons, like texturally.
It's in that mix for
it's
sure.
It's absolutely in that conversation.
And I would say when they did finally release those demos on streaming this year with a couple samples pulled out and a little bit cleaned up, what I did was I went back to the leaked demos and I played those because whether they're blowing out your speakers or not, they're just. They were better in their original form.
100%.
Probably because that's just how we experienced them when they came out. But
yeah, I mean, the memories are attached to them, but also I just think they're better.
John, I'm going to go ahead and say your strongest number one album pick of this whole decade is 2015, in which you just totally broke the system and you listed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 albums. But that's the classic Future mixtape run.
Yeah.
From Monster, Beast Mode, 56 Nights, DS2, and What a Time to Be Alive.
Yeah. It's
that's the decade in 5 mixtapes.
So, JP, I wonder how you think about this, because I that year really changed a lot for me in terms of how I thought about the importance of the album or the relative lack of importance of the album. I remember spending some time that year when we were making the list trying to disentangle those records from each other. And I just felt it was fundamentally not possible to do that. They were all part of essentially the same body of work. They're basically like a four CD set, a five CD set. It's a box set. Just happened to come out online, spread out over a few months, but it's basically a box set. And so when I was thinking of what really defined the year and what I want this list to represent, I realized it was insufficient to be like, it's just 56 Nights. But, and then in the blurb on like the fourth sentence, be like, there are these four other records. When really, to me, they are all a unified body of work. So I think if I started to break the rules a little bit in 2015, and you see that in later years as well, it's because of that. It's understanding that certain artists don't respect the classical album format, so why would I try to fit them into a classic album list? And alternately, I'll put two artists who are sort of working very similar territory at a high level or at the same level, I'll put them together because the collective power of what they do has like an impact in my mind. But I wonder what you think.
Well, I think you did the right thing on Future because it all is one long album.
Yes.
For me, like, the agonizing joy of the top 10 list is to pick which of those two similar albums. So I'll split the decision
for
you. But the album is crumbling. I mean, we've seen that. I mean, people like Future, people like Rosalia, you know, they put out stuff when they want to. They collaborate where they want to. This idea of 10 or 12 songs in a bundle is less and less relevant.
Yeah, and I think this is something in the 2019 list that I thought about a lot was the people who made good records, to me in 2019, I think we disagreed on this a little bit, but were people who were just like, I figured a thing out and I did like 20 of them. I just did the same thing, as opposed to like scattershot, like trying a bunch of stuff. Because I think fundamentally people are thinking in terms of bodies of work now. They're not thinking like an album has to solve 10 problems. They're basically like a body of work captures one moment in time and solves one problem. And that could be one mixtape, one album, 5 mixtapes, 5 albums, but it's typically like contained and unified. That's
how it feels. And I'll say this is really interesting because this is, you see streaming really dawning in these lists because, for instance, in that mix of Future stuff, 3 of those were unofficial releases.
Yeah.
Monster, Beast Mode, 56 Nights. Only 2 of those, I think, are even on streaming now.
They didn't all come streaming?
No, definitely not. Monster was added recently on its anniversary. I think Beast Mode is not currently on streaming, though Beast Mode 2 is. 56 Nights.
This is when people still made mixtapes that went through illicit channels.
And then you see that end with What a Time to Be Alive, which was a big Apple Music debut.
Yes.
Remember on
OVO
Sound Radio? That's a real moment when Drake and Future both became Apple Music artists instead of, say, SoundCloud or Adaptive.
And also Drake doing a great job of hijacking the energy that Future had built over the course of the year. God bless him.
And then DS2 is sort of like the major label version of, let's take a bunch of those Future mixtape tracks and add some new stuff, and then here's an album.
Yeah.
Sort of. Let's just play a little Codeine Crazy, because we're here.
Absolutely.
And, you know.
And so if the ceiling doesn't
collapse. If Joe Mascarelli was a music critic, this song would be in his top 5 songs of the decade.
Codeine Crazy. Yeah, pourin' bubbly, pourin' bubbly, pour that bubbly, pour that bubbly, pour that bubbly. We done went through too much. You hear me? Pour that bubbly, train that muddy, but we covered it. Yeah, I'm covered in. I was duggin' it, I just lovin' it. That's for the muffin' it. That's for the others, yeah. That ain't for you, dog. That's for the others, yeah. That ain't for you, shot.
cause for that other bitch shit. I'm going crazy about it. I'm going codeine crazy. That's how we living it. I'm feeling lovely. I'm drinking bubbly. I'm drinking bubbly.
Think I might probably just drink out the bottle with us going on model, yeah. Out of my this now the carnival, this is a royal Cartier, yeah.
All right, JP, you had To Pimp a Butterfly again at your number one, then Joanna Newsom, Grimes, Art Angels, Slater Kinney, No Cities to Love, another Bjork album in there, Adele's 25, Alabama Shakes, Sound and Color, which, you know, echoes of your 2019 list in here, and Sufjan Stevens, number eight. Ben Ratliff's list is in here.
Yeah.
Ben Ratliff. Probably Ben Ratliff's last list, right, for us?
Probably was that 2015? Yeah. I think that probably it.
And Perellis, I want to throw back to your top single of that year, which was a big moment for both of us. Skrillex, Diplo, That's Jack U with Justin Bieber, Where Are You Now? Another very influential song.
Yeah, totally.
Of the
decade. I mean, how many like little vocal squiggle hooks were we subjected to?
We're
in
born
still
after this.
Still, year.
Still
the dolphin
to.
Sound, Bieber's voice pitched up,
and JP's video piece. JP's
I know the beginning piece. Of Diary of a Song. Which,
yes, part of the
which Joe has turned into the Genius franchise of
you.
The decade.
But you know, we worked together on these early on, and yeah, that was a good song.
Do.
That was pretty good.
Thank
there you.
You.
Go. JP, I'm gonna throw you a. I'm gonna
throw
you a curveball.
Uh-oh.
Your number seven single of 2015, Madonna's "Unapologetic Bitch."
That's a catchy little song.
Did Karen
like
make you
song.
Do that?
Karen
was
Karen
the editor
here
that
then?
Year? I don't know.
I think this is Karen's first year, maybe.
Did she replace another song with that?
No, I'm for that song. I don't care. Unapologetic is a good sung word.
You know how I know Karen started at the end of this year because. Care Monica has a 20-song list with blurbs.
That's accurate. That's true. That's accurate.
And they go from Big Sean's Blessings to Rich Homie Quan's Flex. You got basically all of Drake's, if you're reading this on here, as your number three song, Legend, Energy, 10 Bands, Know Yourself, You and the Six. And it says, the era of paranoid Drake is upon us. So...
It was.
True enough.
Yeah, it was.
Shawn Mendes, Stitches came out that
year. Ooh.
Carly Rae Jepsen.
Peak Mendes.
Dev Hines song, all that.
To everybody who says that I have never written a nice thing about Carly Rae Jepsen.
She was on your singles list.
There you go.
As was Post Malone's White Iverson, the dawning of a superstar.
Very telling. You know, when I went back to do the Drake piece for our end of decade package... Yes, I know what you're thinking. But I sort of tried to identify a number of key songs in the evolution and then locate when their release year was. And 2015 especially was such a poignant moment when Drake had like actually briefly abandoned the turf because he was like too busy like asserting primacy over the rap crown. And everybody else kind of like gets sucked into the vacuum and starts doing that stuff. It was a very transformational year.
I'm just going to give you a little blurb from that song, and then maybe we'll listen to a second of it. Rap became R&B, and there was hardly any resistance. But what about when rap becomes folk?
I mean, I can't tell if you're trying to shade me or not.
No, I mean, Post Malone.
Yeah,
Post Malone. Great American pop star, Post Malone.
Watch out, oh watch out, oh watch out, yeah. I smash out, I smash out, I smash out, yeah. I'm spending on my pay. I got me some braids and I got me some. Started rocking the sleeve, I can't buy with no jaws. You know how I do, it can close on my toe.
It's hard.
Oh. I ain't rich yet, but you know I ain't broke, ah. So if I see it, I like it about that from the start, ah. I'm with some white girls and they love them, like they OT, double OT, like I'm KD, smoking OG. And you know me, and my 2-3s, and my gold teeth. Smiling, you see me from the nosebleed. I'm the new 3, and I change out to my new D.
John Perellis, your number one album of 2016. Lemonade by Beyonce. How has this album aged? Not trying to get you guys in trouble, Just want to know.
Critics shouldn't have to fear getting in trouble. That's how I think.
That's a take.
Lemonade's very good. Yeah. Remains very good. It possibly weirdly underrated. If that's even possible. If that's even possible. Because the kind of phenomenon of it, in my mind, kind of took some energy away from the quality of it.
Mm-hmm.
Or the ability to focus on the quality. But in fact, it's a very, very strong record. It's diverse. There's a number of styles on there. Songwriting's really strong. Production, incredibly polished.
Polished, but odd.
Yeah, I mean, yeah,
polished,
right.
But like, taking chances.
Absolutely.
Not polished like 3 minutes and 30 seconds of pop radio. Also, I think more than Beyonce, this really integrated the visuals. You don't think of those songs without the visuals. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a different, it's a Gesamtkunstmusikwerk. You know, it's...
Oh, it's a what? Wait, say that again?
This is why we keep JP around.
Can I Shazam?
Teach us things like
can
that.
I Shazam that word?
It's what Wagner wanted his operas to be. It's like a complete artwork.
Wait, what is the word, though?
Gesamtkunstmusikwerk.
Woo!
I mean,
just Kunst dropping is our... German gems over here.
First of all, if the next Kendrick Lamar album is not named that,
put it on a drumhead.
You got Tribe Called Quest in here, David Bowie. I like the way you put those back to back. That's artful. You know, those are the last albums.
Last albums. A lot of last albums in that list, actually.
Leonard Cohen's on there as well.
I know, it's really morbid.
Yeah,
year.
Morbid year. You got Radiohead in that mix, morbid in its own way. You got 22 A Million by Bon Iver, morbid in its own way. Anoni, Savages.
This was the most morbid list I've ever made, yeah. I think.
You were in a dark place.
Well, what year was this?
You know what year it was. This was December of 2016.
Gee, why would I be down?
Tough year.
Tough year.
Tough year. John Caramonica, Life of Pablo was your number one album that year, followed closely by Lemonade. We've touched on these albums. We've talked about Kanye.
Yes.
Chance the Rapper, Coloring Book, number three, Do You Stand By It? Is Coloring Book the end of the beginning or the beginning of the end?
It's the end of the beginning. I extended a lot of patience to Chance the Rapper, is how I feel. I extended a lot of patience to him. Acid Rap is better. Coloring Book is somehow more fully realized and less urgent.
But what about Surf? Just kidding.
Johnny Trombone over here. would like to pass on that question.
All right, I've got two more that I'm going to pluck out of this one. We don't have to go through it all. You got Frank Ocean's Blonde at number 7, and you have Drake's Views at number 10, yeah. Tied with The Weeknd's Starboy. Do these albums need to go higher or lower?
Well, first of all, sometimes you need to send a message.
Right.
That's important to know. So if, for people who read closely.
So what was the message?
Should I read the blurb?
Yeah.
Too big to fail, period. Parentheses, in a good way, period. New parentheses, honest, period. Close parentheses.
We all
you got your
like,
tweets off.
I did. Yeah. I did. I like to use those blurbs in that way. Blonde should be, what's right above Blonde?
Lori McKenna's The Bird and the Rifle. As well as a tie at number 5, YG's Still Brazy, and Payroll Giovanni and Cardo Got Wings, Big Bossin' Volume 1. Better than Blonde, question mark? I don't even like Blonde like that, but Jesus.
I will say, okay, yeah, Blonde should be higher, but I will say the thing with the Payroll Giovanni and Cardo Got Wings record, that's a... Just if I can,
you're saying those words in the home of The Daily, one of the most popular podcasts in the universe.
First of all, if Mikey Barb heard the Payroll Giovanni record, he would know it was a smash.
We're getting punchy now,
yeah.
Towards the end of this
so
decade.
So, we haven't identified that we are straight ripped on Popeye's sandwiches and Dunkin' Donuts iced coffee. So, this is we going
not
into
sponsored.
Today.
Not
sponsored, no. That is another record, much like the Emily Sandé record, that holds up incredibly well sonically top to bottom. It's very consistent. The production on that is very, very solid. The rapping is good, and it's well matched to the production. And
the
I
rapping
think
is good?
I think I had come to it maybe only a week or two before right. The list
it's
making.
A fresh edition.
And I was like, oh, wow, this is like, this really achieves something.
And he tucked it in under YG's name. The other double up you did a lot of doubling up on this list.
This is, this is, yeah, like I said, I start breaking the rules.
This is cheating. This is equivocating.
I'm really breaking the
rules. You got Joyce Manor and Pup on the same line with the 11th best album of the year.
Fair.
Just saying.
Fair.
The 11th album in the top 10.
No, there's like, no, there's like 13 albums in the top 10. Wait, isn't Dory Freeman on this list too?
Yes, Dory Freeman at number 6, along with Lori McKenna.
First of all, shout out all my Galax Virginia heads. You know who it is. You know what time it is.
JP, your number one song of the year, Work by Rihanna featuring Drake.
Come on, unassailable.
Unassailable.
Jeremy O. Harris, we stan.
John, do you remember what your number one song of 2016 was?
Just tell me.
No, no, it's good.
Just put the bullet in.
Designer, Timmy Turner freestyle.
Oh!
Drop that.
Not, yes, drop the freestyle, not the album version. It's got to be.
There was no album.
Right, right. Not the finished version, the double XL freestyle. Should we just all, like, hold hands and chant Gregorian style, the Timmy Turner freestyle? Man, I was on one that year, huh?
You really were.
2016, I really was on one.
You listed 21 singles, one of which, I'm going to say, French Montana, pulling a classic Lizzo. Do you know this? Your number 12 song of 2016, French Montana, featuring Kodak Black, Lockjaw, which is on the French Montana album that came out last week.
Yeah.
Which is true. So amazing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Lockjaw, an amazing song. Lockjaw... Okay, so growing up in New York, you know, you hear songs like at 1 a.m. on a mix show, and you're just like, this is the best song I've ever heard in my life. Lockjaw is like one of the last songs I experienced learning about that way, where I was driving around in the car, and it came on, and I was like, Scott! Like, what? What is happening here?
You didn't hear about 5EO Foreign that way?
No, you know where I heard about 5EO Foreign?
Sarah Snyder's Instagram?
No! Is Sarah Snyder all about it?
I think they're dating.
No, you know where I learned about 5EO.
If you got this deep in this podcast, I hope you know what we're talking about.
You know where I learned about 5EO Foreign was at Rolling Loud. When I went, he came out on 3 different stages, 3 different sets to do that song. That's where I first came.
We're moving on. 2016, tough time in American history. But your number 21 song of 2016, Matty B, Friend Zone. The beginning of the end or the end of the beginning?
You love to see it. Everybody go watch the video for Friend Zone, Matty B featuring Gracie Hoshock.
You remember the feature on it. More than you remember the Emily Sande album.
I do. And if I'm not mistaken, the local paper where he's from Atlanta or the Atlanta area, the local paper wrote an article about him appearing
at number 21 on your top 10 songs of the year list. Wow.
Anyway, I apologize. I never wrote. I wanted to write a big Matty B feature that subsequent year, and I
never
did.
The time has passed.
I'm sorry. I apologize to anyone who would have enjoyed that, including myself.
2017, the year of St. Vincent, Mass Seduction, JP's number one album of the year.
I'll stick with it. It was a complicated year. I remember being like totally dissatisfied that year and thinking, what the hell am I going to put at number one? This is the best option.
You got Residente at number 2, Moses Sumney, Julian Baker, Bjork. Ooh, again, Julian Utopia. Baker. Bjork just has a lock in the top 5
I'm
of
sorry,
every Perales
what did I say?
List. Kendrick Lamar's Damn, Lord, Melodrama, SZA, Control.
Nothing bad on
Valerie
that.
June, Vince Staples. It's an interesting
We had, so we had
eclectic
overlap this year because I had Julian Baker, I'm pretty sure, and I must have.
SZA is your number 2 album of that year. Do you remember what your number 1 was?
No, what was my number 1?
Nothing Nowhere. You rode hard that year. For nothing
you know, I got to be honest. Like, I still feel like that record. It's interesting because I thought I would regret, given that the Emily Sande record was like the raison d'etre of this exercise, I thought I was going to have a lot more moments like that. That Nothing Nowhere record is really, really impressive. And coming out of that era, this is the year that Lil Peep dies. I remember having hope. I was like, oh, this sonic idea. There's going to be a bunch of people who, like, really get close, who really do something interesting with the sonic idea, and then this is going to be on Z100 in, like, 12 months. It didn't happen.
We're waiting.
I'm here.
It's not over.
No, whenever ready.
Hey Violet is your number 4, right above Reputation by Taylor Swift.
So my zine is going to be albums that I placed one spot above Taylor Swift albums.
Which is, it's fine. Only God can judge you.
Oh my gosh. This is actually really good. That's a great exercise.
Ozuna, J. Cole, Julian Baker, Lorde, Aminé, 21 Savage, Drake's More Life, Kendrick Lamar, J. Huss.
You see Drake kind of falling.
Yeah, but Drake has the Bjork spot in your list.
That's true. And that's More Life, a strong Drake project, an album, a playlist, something. Quick detour, and then we'll finish up the decade. You see a lot of spots on these lists that I know you guys worked on throughout the year. Either you profiled this person, you wrote a lot of essays about this person, you spent a lot of time with them. I feel like people don't really understand critics are human, and you can get attached to narratives and people and worlds and universes.
Nonsense. We just picked the people to do features on that we knew were going to be great.
Right. That's also a valid explanation too. But I think there's something about that draws you closer to a work.
Yeah, there is something about seeing the person, talking to the person. But it's somewhere in between, though. Publicists would much rather pitch an interview than a review.
Right.
So that you'll be seduced by the incredible personality of the artist.
Do you ever agree to interview somebody without having heard the record?
Never.
For real? Never?
Yeah, for real.
So you won't even go?
If their last 16 albums have been great, I'll go interview them.
Sure, but that's the bar. But 16 records.
Minimum.
Take notes, 5-year foreign.
No, no.
15.9 records to go.
That's like Grammy qualifications, though. It's like, including features.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm trying to think if I ever... I feel like I'm going to say I never have, and then some publicist is going to be like, well, this one time you did this. I don't know. I feel like I want to know what the music sounds like.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe, like, for example, when I did the big Weekend feature in the magazine in 2015, the reason for doing that Weekend feature was it was his first real big, coming out party feature,
It was before
the hits.
Beauty Behind the Madness?
Yeah.
Right.
And I didn't know that he had basically turned into, Michael Jackson.
But he talked about it.
Yeah, yeah, but I just didn't know.
When you signed up for it, you didn't know.
Not at all. I did it. The original pitch or the original proposal to the magazine was to spend time unmasking the most potent, new, secretive force, potentially could be influential in pop. And then we start working on it, and then I find out he's been working with Max Martin and, is about to have, 27 number one singles. So that was a case where I didn't hear the music first.
But you'd heard his previous...
Sure, but I hadn't heard the record in question. That's more what I'm interested in. It's like, you say...
I usually hear the record in question.
Yeah, to me, it's important to hear the record in question because you don't want to do the feature on the record where they start to fall off.
Yeah.
And then, all the good things that you say are actually really about the previous record.
Yeah.
So I try to avoid that. But I'm sure on a couple of occasions, I've done it without hearing the music, but it is definitely not my preference. And the SZA that year, the SZA album is an interesting case because I never wrote about SZA that year. And I listened to that record a bunch, but for whatever reason, did you review the SZA record in real time?
I don't think so.
It was one of those things
that got to us at the end of the year.
Yeah, I wonder what happened. Sometimes things fall through the cracks.
Didn't someone else profile her? Did Reggie profile her?
Maybe Reggie profiled. Maybe that's what it was. Or sometimes things will just be if it comes during a weird week. We're a little bit more flexible now. We'll review something a week later or two weeks later. But at the time, I think we were trying to hew pretty close to release date. So sometimes things fall through the cracks. And the SZA records are good for me an example of one that fell through the cracks. And by the time the year end list came around, I was just this record is almost perfect.
2017 and 2018, pretty fresh in our minds. We don't have to belabor it. We've done podcasts about these. I'm going to throw out some random names. Serpent with Feet. It's your number three album of last year, JP.
I liked it.
Yeah.
It's really impressive. It's weird. It's ambitious.
Yeah, great voice.
He pays multiple listenings. I'll stand by that.
Yeah, we got some more Feist in the mix here. Got the XX came back. John, this is when you start putting Charlie Puth really high on some lists.
No trolling there.
Father John Misty, pure comedy.
On my list?
No.
What?
Like I said, I'm just naming some stuff. We got real loose. We got real loose with these lists here. We're having some DJ Khaled, I'm the One, mm-hmm. some Jacob Sartorius.
Oh,
hit me back.
With Black Bear, right? Yeah. Yeah. First of all, the only time I see Jacob Sartorius' name anymore is when I'm on IG and I see he's going live. I don't really know what he's doing in his music career, but that was a moment. Probably Jacob Sartorius' best moment and Black Bear's best moment.
I thought you were going to say, and mine.
My moment has yet, best moment has yet to come.
JP, you got Rosalia in here.
I was right.
Yeah, of course.
I regret not having Rosalia on my list that year.
Though you did have Pusha T's Daytona.
I did.
A very Caramonica pick.
Very true.
As well as the Turnstile album and the Blaze album.
Yeah, Blaze holds up better than Turnstile, but you know,
that's all right. Guys,
should we go out with a Rosalia song?
We've been on a journey.
What have you learned?
My takeaways from this are, one, nobody can make you guys any less yourselves. Not Fletcher, not Saya, not Karen.
True.
Not me.
Yeah.
Not Jill, not Dean. Certainly not Pedro.
No, no.
Much as he tries. I feel like your tastes have both been consistent, but also you guys really keep up with stuff. You are not fuddy-duddies. You're not stuck in your ways. You welcome new sounds. You push off people who maybe don't end up being the important artists that you thought they might have been. You'll jump ship. You won't cling to this stuff just because you put a stake in it early.
Yep.
I think this is a real journey through the sounds of the last 10 years, and I thank you guys for being good sports about it.
Even though Pedro correctly identified a defensive posture on my part, like, I was 95% right.
We started with your hardest,
I
position.
Didn't know at the time. I was open to it being 50%.
All right. Is there an album that has not been uttered in this hour and change that should be in this mix?
Yeah, I've got one. Charlie XCX's Pop.
Mm.
I think she was really onto something nutty and crazy and adventurous that she sort of backs off halfway on the one from this year.
I'm going to go back to that one.
I'm sorry I didn't have that.
And I want to say, we don't get loads of negative feedback for Popcast. Now, maybe there are people who think negative things.
Sure, I know them too.
Yeah, but we don't get loads of negative feedback. But I will say the one most consistent negative—
That we never cover Charlie XCX.
And I don't know if it's one person sending that email under 10 different guises or if it's 10 different people or whatever, but— Apparently.
They didn't send it to me, though.
No. I'd come to the podcast email. To the podcast email.
And our Twitters.
Yes. So to that person or to those people, John Perellis is here for you.
And with all due respect, we're going to go out with Malamente by Rosalía.
Oh!
That is our show. You can listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com. And of course, subscribe to Podcast anywhere you get your audio content, Google Play, Stitcher, places where Podcast is free, etc. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We will be back next week.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit hyland.com.